But we do kind of breaks those barriers and transcends race, because at the end of the day, people support people.
Yeah.
And if you're, we say love is living on valued energy. If you bring valued energy, it's going to be reciprocated, or it's going to be somebody who doesn't belong with you.
Sure.
And they're not going to work.
They're not going to work.
It doesn't.
All right, today we talked to a guy named Charles Newton III. Now, most of you, if you've ever heard of this guy, would just call him Newt. So here's, let me go back to the backstory of this guy. So I'm coaching college football in Tennessee Tech, and this freshman comes in. His name's Newt, and he's just a fun, gregarious kid on the basketball team. I move back to Birmingham, and this sucker's here. He's in Birmingham. I said, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Come to find out, he is running a thriving basketball business here in Birmingham, Alabama. And is probably, I've heard this said by multiple high school coaches, it is the facility and the coaching and teaching in this area, probably in the state, that is head and shoulders above everybody when it comes to community players and coaching kids. He also coaches pro athletes. We'll get into that. Newt, so glad to have you.
Appreciate you. It's really cool to be here. You
know, I'm so glad.
A lot of these things I'm not as excited to do, but I mean, Coach Cox.
That's right.
Yeah. So. If y'all, for y'all, those of y'all who don't know, he, under the stairwell, the weight room in the football stadium, under the stairwell, beast in there. All of us used to go in there, and you know, everybody, the stereotype on basketball players is we don't like to live. They were right, because we would see the football coaches in there throwing around more weight than us. So we'd be like, oh, okay, this isn't for us.
Oh, Lord. All right, so I've got so many questions. And so I can speak from experience of knowing what you do, because my kid has been with you for a year, and still's playing basketball, but loves you, loves what you do, and enjoys going to Newt's. It's not Alabama Hoops. It's all Alabama Hoops. But no one, my wife don't even know the name. She just calls it Newt's. So that's because it's...
Well, our staff is going to laugh, because like I'm all the time, I'm like, this is not my place. If it was my place, it'd be called Newt's Hoops.
Newt's Hoops.
This is our place. And we've made so many mistakes, but ours, like, we've got such a cool thing.
You do.
And such a good group of people. Not just myself, Sander, but like PJ sets the tone for the culture.
Love PJ. He's
unbelievable.
Great.
Unbelievable.
Right. Great with our kids.
Unreal. Great and then we kids. Have Sam. We have Sid, who does our strength and development. Now, we've got such a cool team.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really taken a different turn, and it's amazing.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So, here's what I want to do first. I want to go back. So, tell me about growing up as a kid with your dad and granddad being in athletics.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's – you don't know any better. You don't know any different. My father, start with him, athletics director at Sanford currently, but I mean, you're talking about for 26 years – he was at the pinnacle of the shoe industry with Converse, with Dr. J, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and then switching over to Nike. And there's a guy named Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And then even seeing that all the way through, he had the NBA from 1997 to 2004 when they had that contract. Then he went back to college and was running the eastern half of the United States with that. And just getting to be around that really was more of an education than any of the coaching that I've done.
He around a lot? Your dad?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. My dad was the best. He's my best friend.
Yeah.
But he was around, and he is who I now kind of structure my life around.
Sure.
Is he turned what he did into a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And he did what he did. He didn't want to be a college coach because he knew the demands of that.
Right.
He lived that with his father.
Yeah.
So he wanted to be a present dad. He wanted to be in my life, and he also wanted me to show me the other side of things.
Sure.
So he was unbelievably present all the time.
Tell me about your relationship with your granddad. Okay, granddad, Sam Newton, legend in the basketball period, state of Kentucky. Tell me about your relationship with your granddad, Sam Newton.
That's my guy.
Yeah.
That's my idol.
Yeah.
The coaching was great.
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing to do with coaching.
Yeah.
He was a first-class human being, fisherman.
Yeah.
First, you know, parent, grandparent. He's unbelievable. The most calm person, soul you'll be around, yet could fill up a room with his laughter.
Sure.
Every time I talk about him, like, when I was growing up, I used to love to stay at my nana and my coach's house. That's what we called him, was coach.
Yeah.
Because I'd eat cold Franco-American out of a can and drink milk with him and just sit there. And then, like, we'd go fishing earlier on his front porch, and then we'd go do that. And that was the highlight sure. of my life is just to get there and sit with a legend behind closed doors.
No, and to you, he was not a legend. He was a legend, but he wasn't the same legend that he was to everybody else.
No, I had no idea about that until I got older.
Did you not?
No, I had no idea. I just knew that after school, he worked at Memorial Coliseum, which was UK's practice facility
right.
at the time. After school, I got dropped off at Coach's place a lot of the times, and I just shot forever. Mm. I just knew he was my grandfather, and he got to be working a basketball gym. I had no idea that he was the athletics director, that he integrated Alabama. He didn't talk about that.
Yeah.
He didn't, because he was like, you know, man, I was just trying to win games.
That's right.
And I was just trying to do the right things. That's all I was trying to do, was do the right thing.
Yeah.
But he, yeah, my grandfather, that's probably who I most like.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because my son has a lot of me, but he also has a lot of my dad. So I think it's a Newton thing where it's, you know, the first and the third and then the yeah. second and the fourth.
When was like, Bubs born? What year?
2012.
Okay. So he was, when did your granddad pass?
He passed in 2016, 17.
Okay.
It was around that time.
So how was Bubs in his relationship?
Loved him.
Really?
Loved him.
Well,
loved
does him. He remember his granddad?
All the time.
Perfect.
All the time.
See, my daughter's 8, and yeah. my dad died in 20. So Georgia was, I guess, 4.
Yep.
And she still talks about Papa. So that's good that he got that.
Bub was 6. I mean, like, we even still pay homage in every single sure. picture. Bub throws up a 4 in every picture
yeah.
to let everybody know he's Sam Newton IV.
That's right.
He has a very strong attachment to
That's
him.
That's great.
And it's cool yeah. for me because
– Oh, absolutely.
That, and then yeah. his relationship with my dad is even cooler.
Tell me about this. And I think this is – was the fact that our – meaning my, yeah. my – I mean, my dad's, you know, coached 30-something years. Was the fact that our parents were involved in athletics – a cheat code for the two of us?
Personally, I think it made a lot of things harder as a player, because we are very similar in this. As respect is earned. Mm-hmm. It's not given. There's no handouts. Mommy and daddy can't save you. But a lot of the times growing up as a player, you want the respect that you deserve from the work that you put in.
Sure.
I think a lot of times you get knocked because people get jealous and they're like, well, he only got that because of his dad.
All the time.
Or he only did that. But I will say, as far as culture building, understanding what it takes to be a man, older me, 36-year-old me, looks at it and says, yes, it's a cheat code, because you get to learn to deal with adversity. You get to learn what being coachable is by hearing your parent, yeah. you know, talk through things yeah. and complain about things. You're like, oh, I'm not going to be the uncoachable kid.
Right.
I'm going to be the coachable one. I do, but I don't, as far as like an immediate gratification thing, but I do long term. Because you understand more.
Here's where Tegan doesn't have the cheat code that I have. So but Bubs is going to have it because of you. Is I remember, and you'd already said it. You don't think you know that you made reference to it. You got dropped off at coaches every day.
Feel me.
And what did you just do? What did you say?
I got in there and shot. That's all I do. I just
so,
shot.
Not many people have that opportunity.
No.
I yeah. had the same opportunity. Every yep. Sunday afternoon, I was down at the stadium.
Yep.
Every afternoon that I could be, I was down there playing with the kids in the neighborhood slash the
it,
kids.
It didn't matter,
it
right?
It didn't matter. It didn't matter. Yeah. The number of footballs I threw before I was 9 or 10 years old was crazy. So, yes, I think it is. I do think you're right that being the coachable kid is harder, because we all knew that – and my parents had to talk with me. Is I'm going to have to be – my dad wasn't harder on me, but I had to earn the thing.
Yep.
It had beyond a reasonable doubt
yep.
that I was the guy in order for him to coach me.
1,000%. My dad used to say, you got to work twice as hard to get half as much.
That's exactly right.
It's how it's going to work. This is yeah. just, your name is a gift and it's a right. curse. Obviously at 36, I look at it more as a gift.
Oh, sure.
But there were times where I was like, man, forget this.
Yeah. It sucks.
This is what? Huh? No, I do all this. But it made you meaner.
It did. It did.
So
tell me about when you were growing up, when someone asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? What did you say?
This is scary. I wanted to be a coach.
Yeah.
I didn't want to.
Me too.
Like, everybody wanted to play in the NBA.
Yeah.
But I didn't, because I respect and I admire coaches.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad would take me to Michigan State to watch Michigan State, Michigan football, and I'd sleep in Tom Izzo's basement.
Yeah.
And to me, like, Tom Izzo's one of the greatest of all time.
Sure.
My grandfather hired Rick Pitino.
Yeah.
Say what anybody wants about off the court stuff. It's undeniable. On the court,
he's awesome.
He's got to be, I'm going to say, he's the greatest coach to ever coach basketball.
He is. He wins everywhere.
Everywhere. Greece.
Yeah.
Iona. Everywhere.
Yeah.
He's going to win at St. John's, Louisville, Kentucky. Like, he's the Knicks before Providence.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable. But, like, I got to go to every single practice that he had during his tenure at Kentucky.
Yeah.
And see that. So, I idolized coaches because, in my mind, a player can service themselves and they can win for their team.
Sure.
But the coach you have in college, 13 scholarships on a basketball roster, you have 13 guys that you're impacting. Those 13 guys can go impact 13 more. We respected the coaches.
Yeah.
And we really admired and looked up to the coaches.
But we also – I was the same way. So, from the time I was five, I knew I was going to coach college football.
Yep.
I don't know why I didn't – I mean, everybody wants to play in the pros, but, like, I don't know why I was like, I want to coach college football. I think I'm a realist in some ways.
I was finna say.
I think I'm a realist. Tegan asked me forever, why'd you not go pro? I just looked at him and said, I wasn't good enough.
But what is it? All right, I'm gonna ask you this. Was it bad to say that, like, to know that you weren't good enough?
No, because I think that self-awareness is the number one thing that we have to have. Now, there's a very, very fine line between being self-aware and believing that you can do anything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So the key is with self-awareness and being able and believing that you can do anything is who are you surrounding yourself with?
True.
That can speak life into you, but yet not at the same time just speak negative as well. Like,
yeah.
They can say, yes, you can do that, but also be realistic.
Because it's things that you can control, sure. Right? You can control how hard you work.
Yep.
You can control what you do. So, but you can't control some physical attributes that the greatest of the greatest. We were just talking about this. I'm 6'3", mm-hmm. 180 pounds.
Yeah.
Okay. 6'3",
yeah.
Right? Strong, built. Most people that we see look at us and think that we're bigger dudes. And it's funny all the time we talk about it. But like I look at it and I say, I'm a midget.
Small.
Okay, so that's not an unrealistic thing. You have to be a little bit crazy and a little bit delusional to be successful in anything.
Yep.
But you also have to be real with yourself on your physical capabilities. And truthfully, very limited. Any skill thing with basketball, I can outskill anybody. But limited physically.
Physically.
Comparatively to the NBA guys, the LeBron James, right. At the time, the Derrick Rose is like,
yeah.
Let's be real.
Yeah. So, like, I was telling you earlier, I was sitting around. I've been out of coaching 6 months, sitting around with the guys I work with at church, and they're like, I just made this statement. I'm a pretty average sized guy, and they all started laughing.
Yeah.
But for the six previous years, I was the smallest guy in the room. Hey, I coached college offensive linemen for the last 6 years I was in college. I was the smallest guy in the room.
Just what were most of the height and weights? I went to school with these guys, so I know.
Average size, average height was a 6'3", but in the upper, the 260 and up.
260
your,
and
your
up.
Your taller kids, your Slade Adams is.
Muscle, not fat, yes,
your,
muscle.
Your Slade Adams is, your Scott Schweitzers are 6'5", 6'7". Slade, you remember Slade?
Yes.
So let me say this. I talk to Slade every now and again.
Seriously?
He's killing it.
Dude,
he's
awesome.
He was crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. I pull him. I mean, the number of – I can't even tell you all the Slade Adams stories. But, like, he's doing really well. He's got a child. He's married. He's got a child. And he's singing.
Seriously?
He's got an album. He's singing. He's doing wonderful.
Slade was awesome. He was a cool dude.
He's great. He's a great athlete at 6'6", 300-something pounds. So, but like back to what we were saying, the size we are, sometimes God just gives us sizes and speeds. And it's like Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps is like tailor-made for a swimmer. Built perfect for a swimmer. LeBron James is built perfect for a basketball player
or a
tight end.
Yeah, I was going to say. or a football player.
Yeah. So you're right. So let me ask you this. So why did you not stay with college coaching?
College coaching changed a lot. NIL, I wasn't around during NIL, but like we saw where it was going. The transfer portal was really heavy. I'm a big relationship guy. Like, mm-hmm. I'll be the first to tell anybody, I've got a million flaws. I do. But being raw and being real isn't really one of them. And I got to a point where you can't have consistent, strong relationships if you're essentially renting players.
Mm.
Because what we're doing is we're taking kids in, and so – let's say I take a Tegan Cox in. Well, Tegan Cox doesn't perform exactly how we want him to. Well, instead of saying our job as coaches is, and something Coach said was, we're a hospital for sinners, not a country club for saints. Our job as coaches is to build up players and to teach them how to do things.
Yeah.
But if they don't perform year one, then they're horrible. They're awful. And you get rid of them, or guys do too well and they end up transferring to a high major. And you don't get to have a long-term impact on people's lives.
Sure.
College sports just, it wasn't what college sports was. I wasn't happy. Man, I got up to 240 pounds.
You were 240?
I got heavy, huge. I was
working all the time.
Well, you're working all the time, but like, I'll be real with myself. I wasn't being the best version of me.
Yeah.
And when you're not the best version of you, you got to make a pivot somewhere in things. I had actually wanted to get out 2 years before we got fired. But there was a weird sense of loyalty there tied in, not just with Scott, who I love to death, Scott Padgett, but my dad.
Yeah.
And what he was trying to do and what he was trying to build. I was like, man, we can do it.
Together. More of like a family type thing, yeah.
But it just, honestly, it wasn't the right fit.
Yeah. Now, how long were you in college?
Shoot, 2012 to 2020, so eight years. And then we got fired right before COVID, or right as COVID had hit. Like, COVID had hit, canceled the SoCon tournament, we were let go.
So why not high school? Why not high school coaching?
I wanted to impact more people. And truthfully, I wouldn't have been ready. And I know I was 30 years old, or 31 years old at the time. I wouldn't have been ready.
Yeah.
I was chasing what I wanted to be for so long of my life that I didn't chase who I wanted to be. And I really found out who I was when I was at my darkest.
Yeah.
And when, like, straight up, imagine, and my dad didn't fire me.
Yeah.
He let go of our staff. My dad loves me, obviously, but speaks more to who he is as a man. Like, hey, you got to make the tough call sometimes. Mm-hmm. Our staff got let go.
Yeah.
It is the most humbling.
Could you have stayed on?
Yes. Yes. With
Who
Bucky.
Got that? Bucky?
Yeah. Bucky. Yes. Yes. Yeah. We had discussions on it, but that just.
Sure.
It wasn't for me. And the most humbling thing is like, hey, Charlie, who was 6-7 years old at the time, hey, we just got fired. But I thought Daddy Newt was your boss's boss.
Yeah.
just got fired. And just try and teach them and understand that's kind of what it is.
Sure.
Because those are the hard times that make us.
Oh, man.
You know, I've had a million good times, but that didn't make me who I am.
Yeah.
It honestly drove me down a path further away from where I really needed to be in life.
So we get out of coaching. Before we talk about that, what are you touched on it a little bit. What are your thoughts on the future of college and even high school NIL?
It's going to be different. It's going to be vastly different. I think the colleges will end up eventually going to where, this is kind of a mind screw, but I think colleges are going to where athletes are employees of the university. I think the class will become, you don't have to go to school, but you'll have the same benefits as a university employee. Most universities allow their employees to go to school and their kids to go to school at a discounted rate,
right,
based on how many years you've been there. I think that college athletes will become employees of the university. Where they'll get essentially a base salary based on position, football, basketball. And I think high school athletics will be completely different. I think what's going to happen is, like, when these guys hit 16, they won't be playing for the elite of the elites will not be playing for the high school teams. I think that they'll play on these Nike circuits, Adidas circuits, Under Armour circuits year-round, and they will only play against the other kids on those circuits. And so what you'll see is kind of what volleyball is done with high school.
I hate it.
I do too, because we grew up in the where sports were just about sports. That I think that's where it's headed. Didn't say that I like it. I understand it, but I don't. I'm not a huge fan.
I asked this question the other day because obviously I'm in the throes of pretty high level volleyball. We got a ninth grader that's playing on the varsity. We've been doing the club scene for 3 or 4 years now, but we're starting to see. I say starting. There's in the last 2 years, we're starting to see kids not play high level kids, not play high school ball, volleyball, and play just club
year round.
I hate it.
Yep.
I hate it because there's something about There's something about, like, for football, there's something about Friday night.
Yep.
There's something special about that experience. There's something special about in the gym with your people that you go to school with yelling and screaming for you, as opposed to 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning and BFE playing whoever from wherever.
In Spooky Nook, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Playing right off of the highway in a 50-court facility with volleyball. That'd be like 150-court facility.
Sure.
Not knowing anybody there, hearing everything, and just hoping that the right coach sees you.
Hope. And it's just, I don't know. And I'm a purist to a certain extent, but I just feel like these kids and these parents are getting sold.
Yep.
Sold is a good word. Sold that they need to do this, when in reality, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids need to be kids.
Yep.
But also need to leverage their skills for a betterment. But there's got to be some sort of, like, checks and balances there.
There does. It's people, and I get hell for saying this, it's new form slavery.
Sure.
I mean, that's essentially, if you're being serious about it and you break it down, somebody has gotten to parents and said, hey, your child needs to be doing this year-round, this, he needs to be here. But they're making money off of that child just for being able to say that. An agent, and it's not a knock on agents because they're just doing what the market says right now.
Right.
But it's essentially that. We're getting kids and we're saying, hey, you need to hurry up and grow up and do all this, but don't worry about growing up as a human and having relationships and being in a community. Worry about growing up and getting your market shares up for what you can do physically on the court. When these kids, man, they need life training.
They do.
They need to understand. They need to make mistakes to where they learn. And you know how it is. You get in trouble in high school, it's not as much live ammo as it is if you do some stupid stuff as an adult.
But it's getting there, Newt.
It's getting there. And we're headed there quicker than I think anybody realizes or wants to admit. The college side of things, I understand that more. I do. And I don't want it that way, because I think that a college education should be something that's very valued. And you should be going to school. If you're not at the highest of the highest of the highest, you should be going to school, because you're making networks and connections that you need in college that'll help you later in life.
So we talked about this off camera.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is not even on script. How important is college today?
For who? If you're asking me, if Charles Newton IV, Charlie Bubb, if Bubb's like...
Your son.
My son, my child. If my son comes to me and he's not going to college on scholarship, because if you're going to college on scholarship and it's free, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. You need to go get your education, network, have connections.
Life.
Yep.
It's a great spot to do life, and you get to play a game for an extended period of time.
Yep. If you get to do it for not free, there's no such thing as free. If you get to do it on scholarship.
Correct.
But if my son comes to me and he's not on scholarship, and we're like, okay, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? How do you want to do this? What do you want? How do you want this to play out? And he doesn't give me an answer, or he gives me any answer that revolves around business. I'm not sending him to college. Mm. He's going to get basic math and accounting classes, and then I'm going to put him in contact with the Thomas Coxes who have ran
businesses. He wants to be a chef. You send him to me. He wants to do real estate. We got a group of people to send him to.
If he wants to do this, I'm sending him to get real life experience early, because I majored in interdisciplinary studies.
Coach, that's what my master's is in.
I majored in interdisciplinary studies.
It's a degree in nothing.
It is a degree in nothing.
It's just like Seinfeld for college.
Just so everybody, I graduated college in 3 years. I took 52 hours my last year because interdisciplinary studies said that I could. And I said, you know what? I need to get out of here and I need to get some money because I'm about to have a kid. Let's do it.
That's right.
Yeah, and so
let me go back and tell everybody what interdisciplinary studies is. Okay, this is not on a knock on a college. I've got a master's degree and a regular degree, but here's what interdisciplinary study is. It is the degree for the kids that don't know what in the world they want to do.
No,
and you take two different degrees and you throw them in a pot and you just kind of sprinkle,
just rock out,
just
with
sprinkle
it.
Those things in there.
Yep.
And you have an interdisciplinary studies degree.
Exactly.
Is it easy? Yeah. But it's just a way of getting the piece of paper that says you went to college for 4 years. Now, let me say this, and we'll talk about this later. There's something to be said for just having a college degree, because it means that you stuck it out
consistently
for 4 years.
I agree with that. I do. I do wholly. But in the big life scheme of things, a piece of paper ain't going to tell me who I am.
It's not.
And I have learned more through failure, trial, error, being around the people, and figuring out what people I needed to be around versus when I did at Tennessee Tech. I had a lot of fun at Tennessee Tech. Oh. I love Tennessee Tech to death. But interdisciplinary studies, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me this. The 8 years that you coached college basketball, let me go back.
You know I'm about to flip. If you ask me a question on college coaching, I'm going to flip it back around on you. So just be prepared to answer your own question. Because I've got some questions. I want to hear what you thought about those guys too.
What skills did you learn coaching college basketball that are useful for what you do today?
Ooh, that's – I learned a lot of how I would run an organization. I learned about being more of a CEO than just a coach. And then I learned how simple it really can be. A lot of times we make things very complicated for ourselves.
Sure.
And especially, you know, college coaches, we tend to overcomplicate things. It's simple.
Have a meeting about the meeting.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's really kind of simple when you all, like, break it down. And then I also learned everyone isn't for everybody.
So explain that.
A kid might, you know, I check three boxes in life now of things, you know, are going to be in my world. Want, fit, and need.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want it, and does it want me? Do I fit it? Does it fit me? Yeah. And do I need it?
Yeah.
And if any of those three things, I can adamantly say no, I ain't doing it. It's the same thing with college when you're recruiting players. Does the kid want us? Do I want the kid?
That's good.
Does the kid fit us as a person? Not, and it's not as far as like, does it fit my style? Does it fit how I play as a person and as a human? Do they fit us? And then do we need them? Because, and that can be positionally, because like if we have, we did the old pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered deal. We had Kristen Cunningham, our starting point guard, unbelievable point guard.
Yeah.
He was a coach on the court, unbelievable. Took us to 21 wins, and we had signed a kid named Josh Sharkey. Josh Sharkey, unbelievable talent.
Yeah.
Unbelievable talent. Well, in the middle of that, there's a kid named Justin Coleman that was transferring from Alabama. He's from Birmingham, Winona High School. Unreal player. What do you need with three really, really great point guards? What's going to happen there?
Somebody's going to get mad. Somebody's going to leave. There's going to be dissension.
Mm-hmm. All three of those things happen.
I didn't even know the story.
and it's not their fault.
Yeah.
Because they were kids at the time. And honestly, the thing that I don't like is when college coaches get mad at a kid for transferring higher. Kristen Cunningham had a season-ending injury and signed with Louisville. And he is from Lexington, Kentucky. Georgetown.
He went home.
He went home. And he went to Louisville
from
Sanford. If I'm at Sanford and I get offered a position as an assistant coach at Louisville, holla.
What? When do you want me to leave? What door do you want me to go out of?
I'll just walk up there.
That's right.
We're good. Yeah. But how we get mad at those kids. So that happened. And that's part of what I'm talking about is just the want, the fit, and then that need. You have to need people and they have to need you for it to work, to be mutually beneficial.
What do you believe in corralling players just so that other teams don't get them?
No. I think that's a relationship.
Yeah.
And free will is an unbelievable thing. It's like you're going into a marriage. I always say I'm going to marry the person that doesn't like push me or want to get married because that's free will.
Yeah.
And I'm with you off of free will. It's the same thing with that. If I had to be like, hey, baby, don't go with them.
Yeah.
She probably ain't into me enough.
Sure.
You want to be with people that want to be with you.
Want to.
So if somebody's wanting to leave.
Let them go.
Let them go.
I love it.
Stop fighting it.
Yep. Okay, so you've been in the college game for a while, but then also now you've transitioned into the still high-level basketball, but a totally different dynamic, okay?
Check. I did it.
Yeah, that's
it. I did it.
Okay. All right.
Well, you asked me that again. Yeah. Sorry.
What are you seeing some of the downfalls in social media in our athletes today?
It's what we value. PJ and I talk about this all the time. Actually, yesterday we talked about it because we have a pretty strong social media presence.
You do.
But it's – you feel like it's more – it's not fake because everything we do is just what they catch us just doing on a daily basis.
Sure.
We don't pose anything. But you see a lot of kids don't want to come or be with people for what they actually do. They want to be with them for how it looks on social media.
Mm.
Or kids, it's a microwave society. They want to come in to do a workout for a video, But you're like, no, dude, you had to work with us for 6 months before I'll ever put anything out about you.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to get better in one workout. Mm. It's repetition over time leads to success.
Yeah.
You had to fail, you had to progress, and then you had to succeed.
Yeah.
Then you had to fail again, and we need to pivot, and then we need to work. But we're not going to get all that in one quick 30-second clip. It happens over time.
So tell me about how you market and promote your business on all the social media platforms.
We have a guy, and the truth is we have a team.
Yes.
And I've learned, don't try to do everything.
Yeah.
If you're not as good at something, hire out.
Yeah.
And just do what you do and stick to what you do. We used to run it early on, but now I've got a guy named Ethan Lowe who does all of our content, and he sends it to me. He's like, hey, this is what we should put out. We communicate as a team on different things that we need to put out. But we only do things that are really happening, that are not staged. We don't do anything staged.
Yeah.
You can't replicate authenticity. And what we've built is a community. We haven't built a business. We built a community.
Sure.
And our community's bought into it because all we do is just highlight things that happen on a daily basis.
Let's talk about strategy.
Yeah.
Just get nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
So Jake Elkins, I introduced you guys on.
Yeah.
He owns Ironclad.
Yep.
Really successful wrestling gym. Really similar to you.
Yeah.
But he's in the wrestling space. One of the things he does from a content standpoint that I think is really, really good, and I don't know if you're doing this because I don't know that I've seen it, is he will instruct the kids.
Mm-hmm.
He'll wear a mic.
Yep.
And he'll have this camera guy.
Yep.
He's shooting the content. That's staged. But, like, it's not staged because it's at practice.
It's his stuff.
He just said, put the mic on.
Yeah.
You ever do that?
We've done a mic before. I'm not a fan about it.
Why?
The truth is because I'm so active in what we do that I'm going to end up messing up the mic. Or I also don't want our kids or our professional athletes to feel staged. So we just do a lot of pure work on it and let them catch the background noises, because I want people to get a vibe or a feel for the vibe in the gym. Because our gym is a vibe. Everything we do
is
a vibe. And so what you're trying to do is get people to understand what you do on a daily basis in short clips.
Right.
For us, at least. And this is our strategy, is we're just going to be real and raw at all times. And that's why we don't really wear mics. We have done some stage things, like, in workouts every week, Ethan comes with an idea and he's like, hey, I want to start doing a drill of the week. I need you to break down and, like, be a little bit slower and do a drill of the week. So we'll do that. But it's not as staged as it's like, hey, this is just what we do. Okay, we're going to wait for you, Ethan, to get ready before we break this down.
Yeah.
And that, as far as that's concerned, that's it. But we do, like, some fun police stuff. It's part of our branding, is we're talking about making U Sports fun again.
Yeah.
So we're bringing the fun police, and, like, every Thursday is Trick Shot Thursday.
Love it.
We are filming just for a trick shot.
No question.
Every Friday, Sam, he came up with this idea, the what would you pick, and he draws on a whiteboard. As people walk in, it, like, catches off guard. The first one he had was LeBron or MJ.
Yeah.
And, like, it things like that are staged and cool, but there's a lot of other things that...
But it's almost like hidden camera stuff, so it's fun.
Exactly. We don't want people to feel... We want to catch your genuine, real, authentic self.
Right.
Because everybody can do this.
I'm going to transition to something a little bit more serious. You're a white owner.
Yep.
In an African-American dominant sport. How has that been challenging?
To be completely honest with you,
mm-hmm.
I'm not your typical white owner.
Yeah.
We've got a really good team.
Yeah.
But, like, I was only one of three white guys in my friend group going up. I mean, I'm, for those of y'all can't see, I'm tattooed, sleeved.
I mean,
you remember me as a player and people I hung out with. What we do kind of breaks those barriers and transcends race, because at the end of the day, people support people.
Yeah.
And we say love is living on valued energy. If you bring valued energy, it's going to be reciprocated, or it's going to be somebody who doesn't belong with you.
Sure.
And they're not going to work.
They're not going to work.
It doesn't. I have faced challenges in the city. I will say that. It has been one of the weirdest things. And it's not a knock, because it's the way it's always been. But coming into the field as a white dude in the city, and I'm not scared to go.
Yeah.
I mean, we took our little Mountain Brook teams and went to play at Tarrant Rec Center, and we were practicing at Willowwood and MLK. Mm-hmm. The threat behind it was interesting as far as threatening of a white guy coming into that space.
Sure.
And having a pedigree and being good, but not being scared to, yeah. if things get thick, I'm not really scared of my surround. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I found a lot of hate in that regards. It was interesting. And dealing with that was interesting because initially I was like, you know, you handle everything calm and with grace. And then over time, I just kind of learned, you know, you have to understand that sometimes the only way to guarantee and ensure peace is through war. And to be ready, it's not saying that you're just jumping out, fighting at everything. That's not me.
No.
But if something arises, an issue where you need to confront somebody, don't be scared to step up and speak your mind.
Sure.
Because if you believe in what you're doing, I mean, there's no better reason than to stand your ground and to fight for what you believe in.
You brought up a good point. How do you deal, all businesses?
Yeah.
All businesses, from food to real estate to basketball to whatever. All people have to deal with a certain level of hate from their competition.
An imitation.
Oh, listen. I can't tell you about imitation.
I'm already knowing with you.
Listen, we started years ago, we started doing the grazing tables and the grazing boards, and they're beautiful and all these things. And I started getting these messages from my team saying, here's another one. Every mom that has 45 free minutes and can go to Trader Joe's started mimicking those things. So all that being said, how are you dealing with the people talking negatively about what you're doing?
I haven't always done great with it.
Yeah.
And for the people that know me, no, I'm a fighter. Like, that's my mentality.
Sure, I agree with that.
I'm like, no. We're going to get to it. I've got a really good team.
Great team.
Like, unbelievable. The best.
Yep.
And more times than not, my team is also my best friends.
Yeah.
So we'll talk through things, and they'll be like, hey, this isn't something you should worry about. This is something you should, like, you need to handle this. And what I found is, like, 98% of the time, it's that dog that's barking behind the fence. But when you open it up, he comes and, you know, licks you and lets you rub on him and pet him. They're not on our level, and they're not even worth it. But I do handle it, and I handle it head on, especially if I hear that something's been said negatively. I just handle it head on with a conversation.
That's the only way to do it.
It really is, and it's not like, hey, why are you saying that? It's like, hey, man, I hear you.
Mm.
I see you.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to tell you to stop.
Right.
But I'm going to let you know, I'm going to keep doing what I do.
Yeah.
And it motivates us, and it's like, as a white guy that played basketball, probably the only white guy on the court most of the time.
Yep.
You got to be ready to back it up, and you got to be able to handle people talking, because people talk, they can't walk.
That's exactly right.